Hi, this is Darcy Lowen, The Chainsaw, and you're listening to the Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast. Joining me in studios, Graham Creech. Creech, how are you?
Not bad, you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. The lockout is dragging on. I don't really want to talk about it. I assume neither do you.
No.
I'm sure our listeners do not want to listen to it as well. But it's been a number of weeks since we've been in here last. So how about we start with Jared Cowan's injury? A big blow down in Binghamton. Or so we thought. Patrick Wierkoch has stepped up on the team's top pairing with Andre Benoit. And they seem to be doing well. A 9-game winning streak was just snapped this past weekend. Seems like they're rolling. At least on the scoreboard. Not on the shot board. But on the scoreboard, they're doing all right.
Seem to get outshot a little bit.
Hey, when you have that guy in a goaltending, it doesn't really matter.
It's been all right so far.
But, yeah. Jared Cowan, out for the season. With a torn labrum in his hip. That's a big blow for the Ottawa Senators if the season is to start in the new year, which many suspect will happen. What are your thoughts right now? How worried are you? If you're Brian Murray, put on your Brian Murray hat for a second. Your hat says Shawville. Close enough.
Yeah. Rocking a Shawville snapback right
Shawville
now.
Shawville Fair, 1979. How worried are you?
Oh, big time. That's a huge hole. There's your top four gone.
The one thing that's interesting, I haven't really talked about it too much on the website, but your top two pairings are going to be different from what they were last year. You had Gontran and Cowan last year, even though Jared Cowan was expected to possibly match up with Carlson this year. That Gontran-Cowan pairing is out the window. And now Philip Kubas signed as a free agent in Florida, so... You know, the de facto partner for Erik Karlsson at this point is probably going to be Mark Mathot. So that pairing's new. Who knows who's going to play with Gonchar? God help us if it's Chris Phillips. And your third pairing is going to be Mike London and who knows?
If you guys have big years in bingo, so yeah. Benoit, Wierkoch.
Borowiecki's down.
Borowiecki. Gryba, they'll all get looks. That's very weak.
That's a soft blue line, with the exception of Carlson. But if his numbers regress slightly, could be a long year on the back end in Ottawa.
Well, it'd be a short year, but it'll take a while to get through. No, that's a big hole for sure.
Do you put much stock into veterans coming off a lockout who haven't had a lot of workload? We have Sergei Gonchar over in the KHL who's playing with Evgeny Malkin. I don't even want to try and pronounce the team's name that he's playing for. Chris Phillips is wearing his Big Rig shirt everywhere he goes. I assume he's tasting the product as well. So who knows where he's at once the season starts, which we hope does start. The blue line scares the hell out of me.
For sure. I think coming into it before Cowan's injury too is... It was a little. It wasn't very deep, we'll say. So that injury is massive, and not only just for this season, it just for his development. This is a big year. He was starting
because he was a guy that you counted on playing at least 20 minutes a night, especially with the loss of Kuba.
Playing, he looked nasty in against the Rangers, and then even in preseason, in the first couple of games in Bingo, everyone was singing his praises of how good he was playing, how much of a physical beast he was compared to the rest of the competition. So that's...
I think AJ Jakubek was the number one fan in the Jared Cowan fan club.
And I want to say Tim Murray.
Yeah.
I want to say Tim Murray was throwing some awesome comments during the preseason, I think.
It's a bit weird, though, because he didn't really want to be down there. Like, he thought he had established himself. But, I mean, he's still young, and it goes without saying that if you're on an entry-level contract and you're young, you're going to go play. You're not going to sit out with the rest of the vets. And
that's where it hurts the most, other than just putting a giant hole in that defense for hopefully when this season starts.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. If you're put on that Shawville hat again of yours. Do you make a move? Do you parlay some of the accumulated assets down in Bingo to make that short-term move? To
depends what's available.
Do you give the core the benefit of the doubt, see how they do for the first little bit, and then make a move from there?
I'd say you'd have to improve that, like, heading into your short training camp and into the season. But honestly, it's been so long I've looked at what's available out there, because there's no hockey that I don't even know. I couldn't name someone who's not on a contract or who's...
Or who knows if there's going to be cap casualties when the season starts.
It's too tough to say that now, but just thinking about that blue line, I'd want to improve that.
Right away.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would have. Yeah, goes back to what you said. Even with Cowan, who knows? Who knows what the state of the blue line is? Because you're banking on Mike London, who's also coming off injury. He didn't play very much last year. Although in his past, he's been a guy who you could count upon for close to 20 minutes a night with Tampa and Minnesota. Mark Mathot was inconsistent, had his injury problems as well in Columbus. So you're banking on a lot of unproven commodities right now to bounce back and play well. And it puts a lot of pressure on veterans like Phillips and Gonchar to stem the tide and carry that workload. But I don't know at this stage of their careers whether those are the two guys that you want to be doing that.
I'm definitely okay with those two being a bottom six. Like, like the third pairing. Like, seriously, I'm not even trying to joke around.
I know.
On that third pairing, I'm fine with.
But the reality is that could be your second pairing.
Yeah, that's scary.
Do you want to move on?
From the blue line, yeah. What do you want to talk about?
How about Mika Zibanejad?
Zibad. It just what his sickness is, or his not
his inconsistencies, the struggles, so to speak.
Throwing a little Swedish national team too.
Yeah, we could throw
lots
that in
going
as well.
On with him.
Yeah, there's a lot of drama going on. A lot of concern over what his health status is right now. He had his wisdom teeth removed, and he apparently was trying to get over some throat virus.
Yeah,
and it's been probably about 2 weeks now, and he still has not returned. They're playing tonight. I don't know if he's going to be in the lineup or not. I know Steph G from the website posted some comments from the Swedish Federation discussing how his illness played a part in the Senators' decision not to let him go to the World Juniors this year. So you hate to speculate and throw out the word concussion because he's had those problems in the past, but it certainly looks suspicious.
Yeah, absolutely. He said the sickness, throat injury. So why something like that would hold him back from attending a tournament that's starting in half a month? I don't know. That's a little strange. But do you read into that too much, or do you think that he's sick? It's flu season.
But it seems like everywhere you read, there's a different reason why he's not going. If you listen to Tim Murray or Luke Richardson speak on the radio, which I know you work at the station, so you've heard their comments about how they want Mika to adjust to the North American game. They figure if he goes overseas to Russia, plays in the World Juniors, plays that game where there's a lot of cycling through the neutral zone, playing in space, having that extra time with the puck, they think it'd be more beneficial for him to stay over in North America so he doesn't relapse, start back at square one and go on. Like, they want him to be part of what's making this Binghamton team successful.
Well, that's what
in the NHL right now.
That was their original reasoning for not sending him, right?
And right. Now, and now it's kind of...
Who knows what that means, but I'm just... Sorry, I was looking up the starting lineups for tonight, and he's not listed whatsoever, so it doesn't look like he's playing again tonight.
Fantastic. Optimism abound.
Regardless of why he's not going, would you rather him spend his time in North America? Or do you think it matters that much?
I don't know if you could actually say, all right, for his long-term future development, this is gonna impact him negatively to go overseas. I don't think you can make that argument. And you know what? If the Senators think it's in his best interest to develop here, I don't have a problem with that. They own his rights. It happens every year at this time of year where a team doesn't release a kid.
Swedish Federation was saying if he was a Canadian prospect, that wouldn't happen. But we see it all the time.
Yeah, but that's politics.
Yeah.
It's politics.
How many Canadian players are kept off World Junior squads every year? Quite a few.
It happens all the time.
Who cares? Whatever the organization feels is best. But I don't know. That's weird. They said they didn't want him going because of his development, and now he's sick. Where did that come from? I know Steph G tweeted that out, but who Who did he?
It was the Swedish Federation that kind of elaborated on the health concerns going on with Zibanejad. So you hate to raise concerns about something that you absolutely have no knowledge or information from the organization of, but it does seem kind of suspicious.
Let's choose not to read too much into it right now.
Exactly. That's the danger. You do not want to read too much into it. Patrick Wierkoch is playing well.
Doesn't look like he's playing tonight.
Is anyone playing tonight?
Here are the defense pairings: Blood, Benoit, Ekford, Griba, Claesson, and Weidman.
Fantastic.
What happened to Wierkoch?
You definitely didn't get called up. You don't have to worry about that. But he's playing well. He's plus 12. He's playing top minutes on the top pairing. Playing in every situation.
Top power play unit, 6 goals.
For a guy who people in the city have been kind of wondering when he'd make that next step to the next level, it's nice to see him physically mature, grow as a player, and finally start fulfilling some of the expectations that fans put on players. It seems like whenever Ottawa drafts a player, or any organization for that matter, whenever they draft someone in the first or second round, if said prospect doesn't make it into the NHL within the first 2 years of being drafted, red flag, red flag, red flag. A lot of fans just can't acknowledge that prospects don't develop all the time at the same rate.
Especially defensive prospects. He had those 2 big years in Denver. People were jacked. There was no defensive prospects in the system other than Erik Karlsson at the time.
Exactly. And I think that lends itself to that whole, well, let's accelerate the process. We need this guy to like pan out right away so you can, you know, quell any concerns about our blue line depth or talent. And, you know, so long as the guy makes it eventually and becomes a contributing player on this team, I'm cool with that.
Yeah, Wierkoch is confirmed as a scratch for tonight, but it doesn't say why.
Maybe he has the Zibanejad flu.
Sorry to go off topic there again. I'm just kind of reading through.
I just saw it now. BSN's Examiner, Wierkoch out with the flu.
Huh. There you go. Flu season.
Hey, at least he wasn't suspended again for throwing a stick.
Unreal.
Perfect segue. Erik Karlsson was suspended a game from the SM Liiga over in Finland for throwing a stick at a referee following a game.
But let's kind of get one thing clear. He slid it along the ice. Tossing a stick sounds a little crazy. When I read it...
Apologist. Daniel Alfredsson would have feigned it. He would have held on to his stick. He wouldn't have thrown it.
That was classic. But, I don't know. What do you think about Karlsson showing some emotion in Finland? He's just mad that he's not playing the NHL right now.
Oh, yeah. That's all it is. That's the Don Brennan take. Putting it's like after another... McCulloch goes after the 5'9" defenseman in the Czech league. It's like, oh, he just wishes he was playing in the NHL. Good times. Good times. It's nice to see guys show emotion, though.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. It's about that time where we have to get to our next guest. Joining us on the program when we return will be Rob Volman from Hockey Prospectus. So stay tuned for that. We'll get into some numbers and the like next. All right, listeners, joining us on the line is Rob Volman. He is an author for HockeyAbstract.com, ESPN, and he is also a contributing member of the Hockey Prospectus Annual. Rob Volman, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to be on. Thanks.
Yeah, welcome back. Rob, first, for the listeners who haven't had an opportunity to check out Hockey Prospectus or a previous annual, maybe you could let our listeners know what separates your annual from others that may be on the market.
Well, the primary difference is that we have a very analytical take on hockey. You know, maybe the listeners might be familiar with Moneyball, you know, that recent movie that came out with Brad Pitt. And of course, it was based on a book. Because, you know, baseball stats are highly accepted in baseball. And we've been doing the same thing for hockey, where we take a you know, that same sort of analytical look at hockey using stats and other types of objective analysis. And that's the sort of edge, that's the difference maker of our book.
How did you like the Moneyball movie, by the way?
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. It was, of course, you know, the best moments weren't really the stat scenes, but like when Brad Pitt came in and he just knocked over a bunch of stuff and said, that's what losing sounds like, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a good moment. I always enjoyed the scenes with the scouts where they're sitting around the table talking about bad body types and guys who have low self-esteem because they have ugly girlfriends. I thought that was some fun conversation. Creech, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, just heading into last year, there's not a very good vibe heading into for the Senators in terms of what you guys do. How has that changed?
Well, you know, we weren't alone in our pessimistic view of the Ottawa Senators. I mean, that's not to excuse ourselves. In fairness, we did have Ottawa, you know, in a fairly tight pack. Even though we didn't have the bottom of the pack, we did have a very tight pack. And when you play 82 games and teams get that extra point, you know, for losing in overtime and shootouts, that can help tighten that pack even more. And Ottawa is a very streaky team, which is, makes it really hard to pin them down. Even last year, they'd go on long stretches where they're absolutely unbeatable. And then just like that, the next day they'd go on just a terrible losing streak. And that makes them a pretty hard team to pin down.
So I noticed in correlation with last year's take that a lot of people were down on Ottawa. This year there seems to be more optimism around the team. I noticed that theme was recurring within your annual this year. Do you feel the same way?
Yes, but you know, my primary criticism of Ottawa has always remained the same, and that's that they... I mean, for several years now, and you'll forgive me for saying this, but they just seem to be satisfied with mediocrity. They don't seem to be making the moves they need to make to really, really be a competitive team. Now, they've got a lot of great young players. Some of them have already popped, like Erik Karlsson. Other ones are about to pop and are coming up through the system. A lot of great prospects. To me, now is really the time for them to be going out and making the moves they need to make to get the talent they need to be a serious contender. But at the moment, they seem to be comfortable just being, you know, a playoff bubble team.
So what type of moves would you like to see them make to put them over the top?
Well, that's a good question. I think the, anyway, we mentioned Moneyball recently. I mean, that book and the movie, but the book was basically all about how to construct a, you know, a good team and what the formula is for constructing a World Series winning team. And, you know, there's, you know, we've come up with a similar formula for hockey. And the formula is basically to get as many elite players as you possibly can, like hook or by crook, whatever you got to do, get as many elite players as you can. Because while these elite players get paid 10 times more, for instance, than your third and fourth liners, I mean, they're not worth 10 times more. They're worth 100 times more. They're way better than those third and fourth liners. So you fill your roster with as many of those elite players as you can, and then, you know, once you're sort of out of space and out of money, you fill the rest of your team with money puck players, you know, those value players that give you the edge. And that's sort of the two-part formula. So really, I think Ottawa has work to do on both fronts.
Now, being a Canadian team, I know if you look across the board, it is generally difficult for Canadian teams to attract those elite kind of players in free agency. So would you draw a parallel between maybe the Ottawa Senators and the Toronto Blue Jays in the regard that Alex Anthopoulos just went out in the market and traded for guys like Jose Reyes and Josh Johnson? Do you think trading some of the accumulated wealth of draft picks that Ottawa has started to stockpile over the years, do you think those are the kind of moves that Ottawa should be making right now?
Well, if I were a fan, I would certainly want that. If I were a fan, I would definitely hope the team would, like, these are some great prospects and draft picks, but move them. Get some stars onto the team. Make a push for the Stanley Cup. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's about winning. And I think the problem with Canadian teams isn't so much the players don't want to come here. I think it's more that in Canada, it's much easier to be complacent. It's much easier to put an average team out there on the ice, because an average team in Ottawa is going to get the type of fan following that, like, a Stanley Cup winning team would do, you know, in one of the smaller American markets. So perhaps there's not that same incentive to put something really, really, really exciting on the market. But personally, if I were a Senators fan, yes, I'd be very happy if the team started trading away some of these great prospects to get some elite talent in there today.
Interesting. Interesting take. A lot of people are preaching that patient approach to accumulate, graduate these young kids up from Binghamton, where there seems to be a winning culture around the Binghamton Senators these days. I just had a quick question pertaining about the core age. I noticed one of the features that is, I believe it's in a second year in your annual, is the core age analysis that's being done. Could you maybe elaborate on that aspect for our listeners who may not know what that is?
Yeah, core age. You'll also find that in the book, so thanks for that plug. We've had that in the book for a couple of years. It's put together by our editor and our grand leader, Timo Seppa, who does a very interesting calculation based on the age of players on each team, and then comes up with this bottom line, which is a core age for each team in the league. And he's been doing this calculation for several seasons. And Ottawa generally is seen as one of the older teams. He actually calls teams like the Ottawa Senators one of the dogs, because they're generally older, but they're not elite. Where by contrast, a team like Detroit is very old, but they're extremely good.
Does being a dog put Ottawa in a very precarious situation, wherein if they go for it, like you mentioned earlier, and they strike out, it's a disaster?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a disaster if you strike out. But, you know, generally with the older players, I mean, you kind of have to have you have to get a bit more results. With the younger players, you can afford to be patient. And so for a team like Ottawa that has a lot of those older players, like generally guys like Alfredson and Gonchar and guys like that, I mean, they're generally on teams which are going for it. And they're just the last few overpriced veteran pieces that you need to put yourself over the top. And so it's kind of weird on a team like Ottawa, where you have all those young prospects and you have the sort of the guys that are supposed to put you over the top, but you're lacking the engine. You know, you're lacking the actual collection of players that actually makes you one of the best in the league, you know?
Yeah, I know, covering this team over the last few years on the blog, one of the biggest concerns that I've had, at least in respect to Ottawa, is it seems like their core players, or their expected core players moving forward, aren't quite on the cusp of being impact players at the NHL level. You can look at a guy like Zibanejad, who's struggling at the AHL level right now to produce. Jakob Silfverberg, I don't know how realistic it is for a guy like that to come in and pot, you know, 25 or even 20 goals for that matter. And you need almost like those transition players who can stem the tide a little bit and help Ottawa maintain its competitiveness and allow those players to graduate to the next level.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, what Ottawa's lacking are those. I mean, they had them years ago, back in the days when you had like Heatley and Spezza and Alfredson, and they were all popping. And of course, we do have Erik Karlsson, which is obviously an elite player. But you know, Alfredson isn't an elite player anymore. Spezza's sort of on the edge. He'd still qualify, but he's sort of on the edge of it. If you could get a couple more players like that, I think that's totally worth trading away some draft picks and trading away a couple of those young players. You know, as awesome as they are, you know, take it from me. You know, I live not too far from the Edmonton market, and I see those Edmonton fans and just the lousy hockey they've had to sit through year after year after year after year. And now they finally have this great collection of kids. And you know what? If that Edmonton team pops and wins the Stanley Cup, hey, they deserve it. They sat through some really, really lousy stuff. You don't want to sit through that in Ottawa, and you know, you shouldn't have to. There's lots of highly successful teams in the league that never had to sit through those kinds of stretches. And there's also teams that had to sit through those stretches and never became good. So, you know, like Columbus. So move those players and get some elite players.
So you've talked about the teams that have struggled and the teams that are kind of just sitting there not really doing anything, such as the Senators. Who's doing it right? Like, who, in your opinion, is doing it right year after year? Since we haven't seen like a back-to-back Stanley Cup champion in so long.
Yeah, but you may not have seen back-to-back Stanley Cup champions, but you see teams that are in the mix every year. You know, like last year's champions, the Kings, look what they did. I mean, they took some real long-term pain to bring on players like Richards and Carter, to bring them onto their team. And they already had that core they had assembled, guys like Drew Doughty, who they basically gave the guy a blank check and told him to write in a number. And Andrei Kopitar and of course the Nets, they came up with Jonathan Quick, and they recently gave him a blank check to fill in a number. So they got all those elite players, and that's only half the equation. Remember, the other half of their lineup, I mean, look at it. They assembled that money puck type players. You know, the guys that can play tough minutes, the guys that win faceoffs, the guys that draw penalties like Dustin Brown. They got all those money puck type skills, money puck type players. And they're just one example. There's other teams like that. But, you know, the Kings haven't won the Cup. That's a good example.
So what are the Maple Leafs doing?
To be honest, I have no idea. I've never been able to sell the Maple Leafs. But quite honestly, the Maple Leafs could put out my beer league team and they would sell out the place. So perhaps they've lost the... I shouldn't say they've lost the desire to win, because obviously we all know the people involved high up in the organization and they want to win really badly. So I don't know what they're doing wrong. Perhaps they've misunderstood, they've misclassified certain players as elite when they weren't.
I was going to ask you as a follow-up, is that a textbook example of a team that they sort of had that patience, but then they had that need to try and go out and get those elite players and they just failed to do that?
I don't know if they've really gotten a lot of elite players. I mean, they did trade away a lot of picks to get Phil Kessel, and they gave up practically nothing to get Dion Phaneuf. So they've gone out and they've gotten a few players, but they haven't been as aggressive at getting the elite players. And they certainly have not done a good job of filling the rest of their lineup with money puck players. That's really where they fall down. The rest of their lineup is, overpriced big thugs as opposed to the value players. And of course, they've always had a problem with goaltending.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. I've noticed lately a lot of your work has been doing point projections for other teams over at the Nation Network. I've noticed one team's conspicuously absent from the Nation's Network. Are there any plans for expansion?
I'm not really privy to the Nation's Network. When I work with them, it's usually just a guest piece. But yeah, we fiddled around with this system that it's called the unofficially it's called the SNEPS system after Harold SNEPS. But we just call it publicly, we just call it the historical projection system, because what we do is we go through all of history and we look for players with statistics that, when you adjust for, you know, the different scoring of the different eras, their stats are similar to today's players. And so you can look at the players and that's interesting. You can also take an average of them. You can take the high water mark, the low water mark, to create sort of a range for your players. And but to be honest, I think projecting points is a very tricky thing to do. And so mostly when I present it, it's sort of in a fun way. It's just like, hey, here's some fun, you know. So I wouldn't take it too seriously.
What can we expect from Erik Karlsson? He obviously jumped pretty big from his second season to his third season. Can we expect something similar, or is there any chance that he can continue to grow and put up even more points than he did last year?
Absolutely. I think there's definitely, I don't see why not. If Erik Karlsson continues to get top line power play duty and he continues to play with, talented defensive players like Mikhailik and Spezza were great last year, he continued to put up those points. Like in that 75-point neighborhood. On the flip side, though, I mean, I don't know how good a premise that is. I mean, you're not going to score 75 points with Lasse Honduras and Kyle Turris and an aging Daniel Alfredsson. So unless they find a way to, unless Spezza and Mikhailik stay hot, or unless they find a way to attract some elite talent, I don't think he's going to have the support that he needs to get those points. But I think he himself, no question, is capable of continuing at that level.
All right. So we've talked about the Senators quite a bit. Do you have any breakout candidates? Like last year, we saw Carlson's jump in points, as you mentioned. Do you see any other burgeoning talents around the league who you might be able to expect big things from, whether it's this year or whenever hockey resumes?
See, if you're just talking about the Senators, I would have actually. I know I just took a shot at Kyle Turris right there, but he actually might be a guy that could, you know, in the right situation, that could, you know, all of a sudden score 50, 60 points, you know, have that big year, because he was pretty hot when he first came to town, and I think he finished hot as well.
Yep, he's a guy who I would expect. Ottawa doesn't seem to have too many of those guys in their system right now who you can expect to break out and see that exponential jump in points, but he's one guy I think you could certainly make an argument for.
And he's also at that point of his career where if he doesn't break out now, he's probably never going to break out. He's just going to remain, you know, sort of what he is.
Buzzkill.
But, you know, I, but he, he's, he'll have the opportunity. I think you know, they'll give him the opportunity. As for around the league, I mean, a lot of picking breakout players has to do with taking a look at their usage. So that's actually one thing that I like most about this year's edition of Hockey Prospectus 2012-13 is that for every team we have a player usage chart. And a player usage chart is a brand new thing. On one axis, you get to see whether a player is used in the offensive zone or in the defensive zone primarily. And on the vertical axis, you see whether he's playing against mostly first and second lines or whether he's playing mostly the depth lines. And then each player also has what's called a Corsi bubble that essentially just tells you how well the team does when he's on the ice in terms of shots, like basically which team is getting the majority of the shots. And generally, if you look at a player's usage, that's a great way to predict the breakouts, because if there's a guy that's really been getting a lot of the tough ice time on his team and you see that situation changing, you see him all of a sudden, he's going to get more opportunities in the offensive zone or against weaker talent or with stronger line mates, then those are really strong candidates for breakouts.
So what's the process to project rookies or players that have come on at the end of the season? And then we'll have a bigger role this upcoming season. That just a player that comes to mind, like Jaden Schwartz. Obviously, there's no history of what you can put into his situation with St. Louis Blues. But if he's expected to fill like a top six role next year, what's your guys' process to project that?
Well, I guess our process for projecting a guy first of all, Jaden Schwartz he's very young, so you don't have a lot of data. And most times, players take a few years to develop. I mean, if you're a teenager and even if you're a superstar, generally speaking, you're only going to get 50 points at best, and even a 40 point season would be great. So a guy like Jaden Schwartz, I mean, I guess he turned 20 this summer. He played 7 games last year, so we have like no NHL data to base it on. So what we would probably do is we take his data at Colorado College and compare that to other guys that, you know, made the move from the WCHA to the NHL who had similar scoring in the WCHA, see how they did at that same age, and use that as a basis. Sometimes that's referred to as an NHL equivalency. Because you can use that same process to predict how well a guy's going to do coming from the KHL or from the Canadian Juniors or from Sweden, wherever. Now, a guy like Jaden Schwartz, I mean, he's 20 years old. He's small. He's just a little guy. I wouldn't imagine, despite how awesome he is and how great he'll be one day, I can't imagine him scoring more than 40 points or so at the upside.
Do you have modest expectations for what Ottawa's prospects will do? I know personally I looked into contrasting, sort of similar to the Schnepp system, but I looked at current NHLers who entered their ELCs at different ages and what their production was like throughout the course of their 3 entry-level contract years, and it seems like the average production for like a 6 to 10 overall draft pick in Zibanejad's case would be like 12 goals and, you know, 26 points. And I'm ballparking that right now, but it's modest expectations. So do you share that kind of modest expectation for what some of Ottawa's prospects could do?
Yes. I think you always have to be careful when you're looking at a rookie that's coming to the NHL. In fact, we got burned a little bit on Stefan DaCosta. We thought that he was going to be one of those guys that scored 40 or 50 points, or at least have the potential. And he may yet, but we didn't do it last year. And so this year, a lot of guys are big on a guy like Jacob Silverberg. He's 22, so he's at least not a teenager. He's been playing in Sweden for a few years and doing quite well. So he might be a good candidate for that 40-point guy that comes in, scores 40 points as a rookie, especially since, you know, the centers don't really have a lot of other options. So he's bound to get a lot of opportunities. And that's actually one more plug I'll throw for the book, is that, as usual, we have Corey Pronman's list of the 100 top prospects. I think Silverberg, he actually wasn't that high in Silverberg. He had him somewhere around 50. You can check that out.
We'll have to talk to Corey about that next time we have him on. Rob, excellent job as always. Glad you came back on. Tell our listeners where they can pick up your book.
The book, you can just go to Amazon, www.amazon.com, type in Hockey Prospectus 2012-13. You'll find it, order it. If you prefer, just go to our site, hockeyperspectives.com, and there's a button you can click on. You can go to my site, which is hockeyabstract.com, and you'll see a little picture of the book. You can click on it. It takes you over to Amazon. If you get it right now, if you order it right now, you might even get it in time to give to your dad or your brother and your uncle and your son and everybody. Just your mom, dad, everybody. Just give a copy to everybody. And you know, get a few extra copies in case someone loses their copy.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Rob, thank you very much for coming on the show. Hopefully when the season kicks off and some games are underway, we can talk to you again and we can analyze what's been happening.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Take care. Have a great night.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Rob Bowman, good chat. Had a lot of interesting things to say.
Especially and, off air after we ended it.
Yeah. It was a little different because usually when you have someone on and you talk about Ottawa, they like to pump our tires with what's happening in a good light with Senators and Senators prospects. And he kind of had a couple other different things to say. What do you think about the Senators potentially going for it or going all in on Rick Nash or...
I think there are parallels to be drawn with the Toronto Blue Jays. I think Rob's right. You don't know what you're going to get often with prospects. There's such a high attrition rate with some of these prospects that you do not know what level they're going to produce at. Not every player is going to fulfill their ceiling. Not every prospect within Ottawa system is going to play for the Senators. That's just realistic.
For sure.
And yeah, if the Senators went out and did something similar to what the Jays did, where they acquired guys like Jose Reyes and Josh Johnson, like good players at premium positions to come in and be pivotal players on their team, I wouldn't have a problem with Ottawa doing that. But like going out and getting elite talent in the NHL is hard to do.
Yeah, easier said than done.
For every Rick Nash deal that comes along, it's, you know, there's a lot of just back and forth, ho-hum. Ottawa's been kind of in that period. I thought the Kyle Turris trade was actually that kind of splash last year where they targeted a young player who hadn't necessarily blossomed with his first organization. I thought that was kind of a savvy move. And they sold high on David Runblad, who was yet to make a real difference at the NHL level. So I think that sort of fits with what Rob was talking about. But I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with Ottawa going out and trading some of their prospects for good established players. But you toe the line in terms of, all right, what's available? Who can you bring in? Who's a good fit? I know when Friedman was on the last episode of the podcast, we talked about the possibility of a guy like Corey Perry coming into town because he has that history with Brian Murray. He'd fill the first line right wing need. Could Ottawa go out and get a guy like that? It'd be interesting to see if you could work out a sign and trade with Anaheim where you send some prospects their way for him. Yeah, in a heartbeat, do it. I wouldn't hesitate. I wouldn't be gun shy. The problem that you risk is, I guess for any general manager, it's that whole moment. Like Dean Lombardi in LA. When do you go all in? Because as you said off air, LA was one of those teams that waited for, you know, 5-6 years before they started getting really aggressive with their
8 years.
Yeah. And then they started getting really aggressive with their trades and their signings. So there is that moment where you start to wonder, all right, when do I go in? Do I do it too early?
So that's why I don't think it's the time for the Sens to go all in.
Not yet. They have a lot of depth in the minor league level. Like guys like Stefanka DaCosta, if he produces at the AHL level, realistically, what do you think his ceiling is in Ottawa?
His ceiling, like absolute highest, probably second line center.
Point-wise, maybe 40, 50 points? 20 goals, 20 assists? 15 goals, 35 assists? Playing with the right guys? And he's undersized. I don't know. That's being a scout would be difficult because you have to project these guys and maximize their value. To me, DaCosta would be a guy to move because you have some young centers within the system already. You have a Derek Grant who could be that third line guy.
Agreed, but what do you get for him?
You package him with someone else and see what you can get.
It's tough.
Yeah, especially, yeah. I just, even if you go all in on some players, Otto, I don't, know if Ottawa's blue line depth has the talent to be kind of making those short-term moves yet. I think they might be a year away.
You'd have to fill two or three spots.
Because goaltending's already taken care of. You don't have to worry about that.
That's fine.
The forward ranks are pretty deep on the wings. You have Turris up the middle. Spets is signed till he's 32, and then you have to worry about that.
But then you got
even then, is he a guy that you want to extend at the age of 32 and possibly get the diminishing returns that Volman talked about on the show?
As long as you're not building around him, probably, but it's tough to tell.
How much do you pay a guy like that, though?
Well, it would be... He'd take a haircut, for sure.
Tough decisions.
I don't think the time is now to start packaging up.
But you have to admit, though, it is a weird situation because Ottawa's best players, with the exception of Carlson and Turris, most of them are in their late 20s, 30s.
Oh, absolutely. But they don't have... Like, they don't have those guys that are just about to peak. Like, they don't have anyone other than Carlson. So
Turris, maybe?
And then maybe Turris, but nobody else. Yeah. Everyone else is a prospect.
Yeah, they're
right now,
18 to 20 years old.
Or Daniel Alfredson, who's about to retire.
Yeah.
And they'd have at least two spots in the blue line to fill to be a super competitive contender.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Last year, everything, conceivably anything that could have gone right last year, did. Their best players were productive. Their best players were healthy. Erik Karlsson became a phenom. Won the Norris Trophy. They got relatively good goaltending down the stretch. Great goaltending down the stretch. They overcame Craig Anderson's struggles in the first half of the year because they scored a lot of goals. And they still finished in eighth spot in the Eastern Conference. It's a freaking delicate balance. It's unenviable. I would not want to be a general manager. Weighing the future gains versus the short-term effects. Because if you're wrong, that's your legacy. It's like John Muckler. People look at him, he was around for the Cup years, but he decimated this roster.
And that's why you talk about going all in. Before the last few years, we didn't have anyone to give up to go all in. Who were you supposed to trade to get that guy? There was nothing.
Ilya Zubov? No. No, you're shaking your head.
Kegorodov was the guy.
Kegorodov. Oh, yeah. Anyways, speaking of prospects.
We were going to do the same segue right there. Go ahead.
No, give her. This was your segment.
Speaking of prospects, are you getting jacked up for the World Juniors?
Yeah, I was in the pub after work this afternoon, and then there was some prospect stuff going on in Calgary that I was starting to pay attention to, seeing the line combinations and the rest of it, getting excited for like the red-white games, the CIS friendlies, I suppose you would call them. It's starting to hit me. I think once you get closer to Boxing Day and it really starts to ramp up, I'll get into it. But the tournament's in Russia, so I don't know how that will affect things as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's always a fun time of year watching the kids play.
You know what I always do around this time? It's the first thing I do. I've already done it. Go onto YouTube, find the Eberle tying goal. Boom. Instant goosebumps, pumped for the whole tourney.
You knew when the kid iced the puck, though?
Yeah.
Going for the empty net? Karma.
I was at the game. I said that as loud as I could to everyone that would listen to me. I was like...
It's because you were hammered.
Yeah, I was. may have been a couple of F-bombs in there, too, but I called him out for icing that puck.
That was selfish, by the way.
Yeah, I called him a selfish fuck, probably. It's probably 100% what I said.
A couple of omissions from the junior teams. Pumple, he had a shoulder problem.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that he wasn't invited?
Not with the injury. And like Hockey Canada said, this is not the time to get back into...
game shape.
Yeah.
The only guys who are playing at their peak already.
There's too many other guys right now. I don't know, a lot of questions, though. They lost 4-1 today to University of Alberta or whatever. I don't take too much stock in that other than the fact that the guys that are trying to make the team didn't do anything to
improve their chances, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's the whole cohesiveness, chemistry issues that come from games like that. Nothing to read too much into. Cody Ceci's omission, was that somewhat striking to you? Because you've watched more 67s games this year than I have, probably.
I thought that he would be. I thought he would be invited to camp. I didn't think if there's going to be a lockout, I didn't think he had a chance. Mm-hmm. Just in my opinion, I obviously there's
Yeah, Ryan. He's an offensive defenseman first.
Well, I don't even know if he's guaranteed to make the team.
Yeah.
They got Dougie Hamilton for sure.
Mm-hmm. Ouellette,
if he's healthy. Morgan Riley.
Harrington.
Harrington, the two returnees for sure are making it. So that's four. So you already got one offensive guy for sure.
And Ryan Murray got hurt. He's done. So he's not even going to be there. But he would have been another
guy.
Yeah. Griffin Reinhardt's there.
Griffin Reinhardt's there, but he's not.
Matt Dumba.
So basically, I think they're looking at filling their bottom three. So,
but there are a number of good candidates on that team. So I'm not offended by it.
No.
I don't take it as any slight to Cody Ceci. He's played on a horrifically, horrifically bad 67s team. Young 67s team.
Probably be moved at the deadline.
Yeah.
Or sooner.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a tough defensive squad to make. What about, speaking 67s, Sean Monahan, Tyler Graevac? What do you think of their chances? So Steve Spott has come out and said that they're not going to pick the team based on age. He's also singing some high praise for Monahan. They said that he said that his hockey sense is at an NHL level right now, and
he had a good summer.
He had a good
summer tournament for them as well
against the Russians. Yeah. Where CC didn't, and they said that played a part in it in not getting the invites. They weren't happy with how he played in the two games, I think, that he got into.
Can't fault them for that.
So you think Monahan, there's a few 17-year-olds, Druin, McKinnon, Monahan, and Shinkaruk.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
Well, Druin and McKinnon have chemistry together, so that makes sense. I don't know if Graevac's chances are that great. Tough to say, man. It's tough to say. Every year you have these discussions. It's just, it is what it is. It's the nature of the beast. And it's a lockout year, so there's way more attention than it normally would be.
The Winnipeg Jets have said that Shifley's going to play the whole tournament no matter what. Like, if there's this new CBA tomorrow, they're not gonna pull him.
Well, he can't play until January 1st anyways. Yeah,
so he's good to he's good to go. Do you see any other clubs doing that? Like, Ryan Strome with the Islanders or Jonathan Huberdeau with Florida Panthers?
Ottawa with Mika Zibanejad. probably.
Like, obviously, Nugent Hopkins he's playing with the Oilers. If there's a new deal, he's coming back.
Yeah, probably.
Because there's a few guys on this team could be playing in the NHL right now. Dougie Hamilton.
Yakupo being another, if you want to go that route.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, all those players might.
Are you going to get up on Boxing Day?
Yeah. What time's the game?
4.
In the morning?
Yeah. Germany.
Yeah, probably
that's,
not.
That's a thing, eh? That's the...
If it was someone...
If it was Russia or USA?
Yeah.
I'm working the game, so I'm going to pull an all-nighter Christmas.
Ugh, gross.
Got to be at work at 3:30.
Gross. That's awful. Any closing thoughts before we go?
Not really. Let's get a deal done. I don't want to talk too much about the lockout. Hopefully we're talking about seasons coming up next time we talk.
It's, yeah, I miss it, but other stuff is filling in.
Like what? Baseball off-season.
Football's been great. Like all those Thursday night games this year, the Saturday games, Sunday. It's around, so it keeps you busy.
Lots of people getting it. The NFL is the new poker this year. From the last lockout, but
yeah, definitely not getting into poker. Definitely
ship
not
has sailed.
Poker. Yeah,
no, I don't know. I miss it big time. I had the center ice package. I was watching games every night. I really miss it. I miss watching the best players in the world do their thing. It's my favorite thing to do.
I miss having more to write about. I don't want to complain about the problems that writers have or bloggers have, but it'd be nice to talk about something that isn't based in legality.
Oh, absolutely.
And the CBA.
We said before, we both miss being in the building.
Yeah.
There's people that their jobs are affected by this, but I miss the game for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're not alone. Creech, thanks for coming in, man. Good show. Good times.
Thanks for having me. Let's do that.
All right. Thanks, listeners. Thanks for checking us out. Thanks to Rob Volman for coming on the show. I highly encourage anyone who hasn't already to go pick up the Hockey Prospectus Annual. Pick up the hard copy, or you can pick up the electronic PDF version off the Hockey Prospectus website as well. Go do it. It's It's a great read. So it'll open your mind to some new things that you may not have already considered about the game of hockey. So check it out.
Hello, madame and monsieur. Ladies and gentlemen. One short message to you. One to represent.